Do you know what you want for Christmas?
A cute toy.
No, I just want my family back.
That's what I want for Christmas.
We'll see what Santa can do, okay?
It's Christmas, so be of good cheer.
Merry Christmas.
Tis the season to watch telly on Channel 4. Stream now.
So what if the biggest thing holding you back isn't your past, your circumstances, or your talent, but the story you've been telling yourself your entire life? Today, we're breaking down the invisible walls that shape our identity, our success, and our potential. Today's guest is Stephen Rue. He's the best-selling author of Must. He's a life coach and a transformational leader whose work helps people break through the mental barriers that keep them playing small. So Stephen turned his own painful history and limiting beliefs into a blueprint for personal power, purpose, and reinvention. And his message is simple but life-changing. You are not your past. You're your potential. Before we get started, a quick shout out to Dr. Bradley Nelson and iHeartRadio for your sponsorship. And to our audience and our fans, please do not forget to like and subscribe before you leave today. Stephen, it's so great to have you here. I'm digging the black background, like I said, when we jumped on the call. How's it going?
It's going great. I'm here in New Orleans having a wonderful, wonderful day. And this podcast makes it perfect.
Beautiful. And you taught me something. Apparently, I was saying New Orleans wrong. New Orleans wrong. See, I can't even say it right now.
All right. I'm here to tell everyone around the world that we call it New Orleans.
New Orleans.
We don't call it New Orleans. Okay. So that's the first lesson of the day. And it's an important Perfect. One. Okay. Just like everyone likes their name pronounced correctly, New Orleans yeah. does as well.
Yeah, it's funny you say that when someone pronounces, like, I remember being in sports and someone said my last name wrong, and it just, like, rattles you, you know? It's interesting.
Well, my name's Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N. I can't tell you how many people call me Stephen. And that's actually correct, but that's not how I pronounce my name.
Stephen, right. So that'd be like a French name.
Yes. My whole name is, you know, Stephen Rue, R-U-E. French yeah. for street. It's easy to remember.
Oh, man. So let's jump into today's topic. I'm super excited to talk about it because, like we said before we hit record, I think a lot of people are being affected by this and they don't even know. It's like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So let's talk about limiting beliefs. Why do limiting beliefs have such a powerful hold on people across every culture, every age? Like, it really doesn't discriminate. It affects all of us. Why do you think that is?
Well, let me give you a little bit of background. First of all, I'm a lawyer by day, and I'm a coach, an author, a speaker, every other
So you're not busy at all is what you're saying.
Yes. And I've represented thousands of people in divorces and also hundreds and hundreds of people in personal tragedies and personal injury and wrongful death. And over, I see people with limiting beliefs that affect who they think they are. People come into my office with a cloak of being a victim, with the costume of a victim. I say costume because they have adopted a way of being. When someone is sad, or let's just say they think that they're a victim, how do they act? How do they look? They usually talk with a lower voice and slower. They usually have a posture which has bent over closer to the ground.
Yeah.
And their words that they use are not those of empowerment, but rather those of being subjected to something.
Yeah.
And we need to really take a moment. I call it etch-a-sketching. When I grew up, there was a little toy called an etch-a-sketch. And it had two knobs on it. You remember that?
It
had two knobs on it, and you can draw pictures. And then if you didn't like the picture, wanted to change it, you just shake it up. And then that picture would disappear. We need to erase that drawing we put on the chalkboard. I don't know if chalkboards exist anymore. But we need to change that vision of ourselves in our mind. those things that are holding us back. There's the old analogy of learned helplessness of a when they had elephants in circuses, they would chain them, and the elephants learned that they could not escape, and so they would just walk around the circus tent. And then over time, they put a little small rope or twine or whatever, and the elephants still thought they could not escape. Well, we're told things that may, in our formative years and even in our adult years, that act as hurtful chains. And we don't realize that we're not connected to that chain. It doesn't have to be an umbilical cord of suffering in our lives. And so we have the full ability to not accept those things as our identities, our story. You know, when I was a kid, Lisa, I had some physical problems. I was significantly pigeon-toed and had to have the steel braces put on my legs. I
Oh, me
was
too.
tongue-tied. You too?
I had the braces, I was
What's
pigeon-toed.
interesting when you say the U2 about, oh, I had that kind of problem, is that we all have our different flavors of suffering, is what I say. You know, and as a result of that, whatever our physical issues are, whether we're too skinny, too fat, too this, too that, whether we are smart enough, not smart enough, don't have the right opportunities, we all can pick these things that are reasons for us to believe we're less. I had them, you've had them, we all have them. And we have to choose who we want to be. Like my book called Must Becoming the Person You Want to Be, it's not suggesting that we have to go outside of ourselves to find that great person, that superhero for us. No, that superhero already lives within us. But it's being held down by our own chains, the chains that we are creating on ourselves.
What would you say one of the most common limiting beliefs are that you see across the world?
That they are not enough and that they are not loved. By far, those are the two most limiting beliefs that affect their belief system, their value system, and then their mindset, because your mindset is directly related to what you think about yourself. You know, a lot of times our parents, our teachers, our loved ones that have the best intentions of the world tell us we can't do something because they don't want us to get hurt, or they don't want us to be disappointed in trying something and failing. When in reality, what our parents, our teachers, and our loved ones should be teaching us as we're young and throughout life is to do embrace change, do embrace taking risk. Because I call those the clarion calls of life. We know that we're alive when we have a little fear in our life. We know that we are alive when we feel that, oh, that nervousness of, oh, I don't know what's going to happen. Those are wonderful blessings of life. That grace of the blooming of unexpected things is right around that corner. And it's when we don't take those chances, when we believe that we can't, when we have that fixed limiting mindset, we don't have the fear as much. We don't have the trepidations as much, but we have more regret of the things that could have been.
Can you share a limiting belief from your own story that nearly defined you, or maybe it did for a while?
Well, I didn't think I was loved because my father got divorced from my mother, and he wasn't in my life after a few times of visitation after the divorce. And he died at 80 years old, and I didn't have a relationship with him. I thought that I wasn't enough. My stepfather committed suicide when I was 11. And so I thought that he left me, that I wasn't enough and I wasn't loved enough. So when I say that not being enough and not being loved Well, we can take on the personification based on things that happen to us. But what I also believe that we need to take a shift. Like when my stepfather was contemplating committing suicide on that day that he did, I often wondered, what if he had a slightest shift of perspective? If he looked and said, tomorrow's another day, if he really counted his blessings that simultaneously existed, then he might still be here today. And we
Right.
all need to take the slightest shift of perspective when we're in that dark place. And when we're feeling we're going into that dark place, we need to become mindful and realize, hey, I'm okay at the moment. And I don't need to be hyperbolic about it, meaning I don't have to be excessively attaching emotion to this, because in reality, the majority of the time, the worst things don't happen to us. The things that we fear generally don't happen to us. And also, there are many things that we feared in life in our past. The worst things that happened to us, guess what? If you're listening to this podcast, if you're watching this podcast, if you're here on Earth right now, you survived that. And so you're
Right.
going to survive whatever you're going through now as well.
So, what was the turning point for you when you said, like, when you recognized these limiting beliefs, and then you said, I'm not going to live like this anymore?
It was a long process, like I believe it is for everyone. I started reading self-improvement books.
Thank you for saying that, because there's all these quick fixes going on right now. Everyone's like, these quick fixes are being sold everywhere, and it's not real. It does. It takes work.
Look, my book is 504 pages long.
Nice.
It's not a quick fix, but every chapter is a step in the right direction. It's a yellow brick road of when people don't know where to start, my book Must is where to go. And I'm not just trying to sell my book, I'm trying to change people's lives. And there's a huge, huge ass difference. Okay?
Yeah.
There just is. I'm not here to sell books, I'm here to change people's lives. I don't want other people to stay in the misery like I used to feel. And so I got to know the Tony Robbins of the world, the Brian Tracy's, Les Brown's, Jack Canfield's. I read their books, listened back in the day to cassette tapes, then the CDs, now digital. All of these things I continue to read. My library is so full of books, and I read them over and over again because I want to get better. I want to learn. And there's a certain level which I find very interesting about myself and about others, that it's an insatiable desire to be different than what we are now. It's a strange phenomenon. It's a lack of satisfaction in our personal status quo. That's a double-edged sword. Even in self-improvement, we want to change, but what are we changing out of? Because we need to also find that balance, saying, I am happy with myself. I'm perfectly imperfect, and I can be loved, I can give love, I can serve people, etc., in this state of imperfectness, while at the same time wanting to try to climb out of any misery that you may have, any suffering that you may have, or simply trying to get better financially, better in your state of life to help your children, yourself, your spouse, your loved ones, yourself. To improve your knowledge in your faith, to improve your relationships, to improve your health. There's so many things that we can do, still believing that we are enough and we have enoughness in the process. And I think that starts with, to further answer your question, to embrace myself and to embrace others with love and self-love. And the vulnerability to do that is remarkable.
Yeah, there was a time when I was so angry, and it was angry at myself, but I didn't realize it at the time, and I was just irritable at everybody. It was like someone could
Yeah.
breathe and I would be mad at them. And it was like, and I was like sat down one day and I was like, why am I so angry? And it was because I didn't fully love myself and I had all these limiting beliefs. And then once I started fully committing to radical self-love, and it's not selfish. It truly is not selfish to want to love yourself fully. That's when all of that anger started dissipating. And suddenly, when someone breathed, I didn't want to punch them. Like
Yeah.
it starts within ourselves.
So when you asked me earlier about our limiting beliefs, our learned helplessness, and how to deal with it, really it starts with self-love. I mean,
Yeah.
if you really go back to it, self-love is the fertilizer of growth.
Yeah.
Because without that as the foundation, we have a crumbling foundation. We
Yeah, I
need
was almost
to.
destructive. I was destructive. I was
Yeah.
crumbling. I was crumbling and I was taking down other people's foundations because I was miserable.
But we got to start with ourselves because we need to find a way to help our self-healing. Everyone has a certain level of hurt, of pain, and if they need to acknowledge it, that's the first step of growth, is to acknowledge who we are and acknowledge that we are more than just the electrical impulses in our brain that shows us that we're less than what we are. We have
Yeah.
the full ability to create ourselves in a way that I believe, as I'm a man of faith, so I believe that we are created in God's image and there's no imperfect soul on this planet.
Yeah, I believe so too. So, where do our limiting beliefs come from?
Imperfect people trying to teach other younger people how to grow and
So,
develop.
childhood.
From childhood and our formative years, by parents that are learning how to be parents while they're still learning about themselves, that
Right.
parenthood doesn't come with a great learner's manual, does it? And
No,
so,
and as a kid, I thought my dad knew everything. Like I remember
right.
thinking that. I literally thought my dad
Yeah.
knew everything.
I thought my dad knew everything too, including that I wasn't good enough for him.
Right.
So it's the we have to be really concerned not to put our parents on so much of a pedestal that it diminishes who we are as human beings.
Yeah.
At some point, I used the umbilical cord symbolism earlier, but we truly need to cut our own umbilical cord from those people in our past that are controlling the way we think and how we think about ourselves. We need to be in that quiet place of reflection to shed ourselves of these negative, heavy, dark beliefs that are just holding us back. My suggestion on how to do that, I have another book coming out called The Suffering Basket, and that deals with objectifying our suffering. Because I'll give you an example, loneliness. You can take loneliness that you may feel and put it in and view it like you're viewing it from a basket or some kind of ornament on your kitchen table and look at it. Oh, this is loneliness. How did I get lonely? What does it feel like and why am I feeling this now? And then, oh, okay. Well, I guess I can go and actually make an effort to try to go say hello to someone else who also might be lonely. Because people that are lonely, oh, like this ornament that I'm looking at, they think they're the only ornament out there, where in their ornaments of loneliness up and down the street in the same neighborhoods. And all we need to
Right.
do is lend out a hand, lend out a voice, and say, "Hi, I'm Stephen. What's your name? Lisa? Oh, nice to meet you. How are you?" And so when we look at our elements of suffering, not from something that is tattooed on our soul, but something that is outside of ourselves, then you could ask, well, do I want to put this element of suffering back in me and say, I am a lonely person, or I'm going to keep it outside of me and say, oh, I have loneliness, but I'm not a lonely person. That unique difference is huge. It's huge because when you can disassociate yourself from your negative emotions and your negative feelings, then you can cut that umbilical cord towards it. You can cut the line, that chain of your suffering away from you, and then you replace it with positivity. You replace it with your self-love, just saying, I can love myself, doggone it. I'm going to love myself. I'm going to, I am now going to do it. Even when I just said going to, I made a mistake in my own language because we keep saying to ourselves, I'm going to try to do this, I'm going to try to do that.
Right.
What I really want to do is kill the word try, because when you're saying you're going to try, usually that doesn't mean I'm also going to act upon it. That usually is an excuse and lie to ourselves that it is something I might do in the future. I might consider, am I going to go to your birthday party? Well, I'm going to try. No, you're not. And okay, I'm going to try to lose weight. No, you're not. Unless you're in the gym on the treadmill or lifting weights or something while you're saying you're trying, you're not. You
Right.
need to take some small incremental action that starts the inertia of the momentum of your positive life by doing something instead of just pondering upon it. And
Yeah,
so
it's
if
like
you
the person
want to get
who's
rid of your limiting beliefs, you do need to objectify them as not being true. Where's the evidence of this? And if so, that still doesn't define who I am now, even if I define myself that in the past. But you need to move forward through action. Whatever it may be, the smallest of actions. If you want to go lose weight or you want to get more fit, put on your tennis shoes. Call and get a membership at the gym. Take a small action that's going to lead to another action that's going to create a habit in the future. That's how we make positive material long-term change.
Yeah, I agree. If we attach to those emotions of, say, if I identify as being a lonely person,
Yeah.
then I identify as a lonely person. So that means I'm alone, you know, and then I'm not taking those actions to not be lonely because I'm identifying as a lonely person. If I'm angry, that means I'm angry. So I'm going to act angry and I'm only going to notice the angry things in the world. It's really hard to look outside of ourselves to see ourselves from a bird's eye
Yeah.
view. How would you suggest that people start analyzing themselves to find out what their limiting beliefs are?
Find how you talk to yourself and to others. Basically, they leave clues because I say all the time, our words that we use in our internal conversation, in our external conversation, show what our contract is with ourselves, because we are literally writing the story of our lives as we speak, most
Right.
particularly to ourselves. Now, here's the thing. I've often wondered about this. Who's that person you're talking to when you're talking to yourself? Who's talking back to you?
Yeah, the voice in
Who
your
is
head.
talking back to you? And here's the answer. Generally, it's the negative person that's talking back to you. It's the person telling you can't do something, because we have what's called a negative preference in life, a negative bias in life, because we're trying to protect ourselves from the bad things and the bad people out there. So we want to stay in this comfort zone of staying who we are. And so our self-talk is going to say, you're good, you're good, you're good, even if you're saying you're not.
Right.
So one of the most wonderful things I've heard in a long time is stop listening to yourself. Stop
Yeah.
listening to those negative words that you say to yourself. L allow those words to become conscious. Oh, I'm saying this. I'm saying this to my friends. Well, that's not true. And then I also suggest you ask your friends, those who you love, those that are close to you, those that you trust to be radically truthful with you. What are the things that I say about myself and my capacity to do things that you think are limiting? Please tell me, because they may be so habitual in the way I speak, in the way I think about myself, that I don't see it. Most people will see those things because we see other people's flaws quite easily, don't we?
Oh, all the time.
And yet
I'm
it's hard
forever
to see
pushing
our own.
people to be their best. And then when it comes to myself, I can't, yeah, it's different.
Yeah. Even if we're fine-tuned into looking at the if it bleeds, it leads on the news. And so we're fine-tuned to look into the negative things in life, and we should really turn that around and get rid of that. Totally
Yeah.
discard it. Don't turn on the news in your life. Turn on your creation in your life. Be creative in your life. Be your own artist, your own sculptor. And you can do that. Learn how to paint yourself, of yourself. It may look silly at first, but you're in a process, and it's okay. It's okay not to get it right because there is no right. But moving forward is critically important. And I'm going to encourage everyone to please consider doing that. Take the time to invest in yourself. There's sayings about more people spend more time and effort planning their vacation than they do their own lives. I
Yeah.
want to take that a step further. They don't even take the time to consider about their own identity. We don't. We're so busy getting the kids to school. What are we having for supper? Well, I have this to do at work, that we don't take the time, take the breath, take the silence, the beautiful golden silence necessary to look at ourselves. My suggestion is that you should take a piece of paper, more than one sheet of paper, take a whole pad, and write down the words, I am, by yourself, no one else around, and just write until you can't write anymore. Anything that comes into your mind, put it on paper. Just download it all. Just a mass download. Just do it. Put it on paper. Anything that you think, good or bad, don't critique yourself in the process, but put it down. That's a golden basket for you to go through in the future. After you do that, step away from that many pages of I am and come back several days later for another moment of calm, quiet, solitude and read what you wrote. Highlight those things that you think are negative or limiting to you. You're going to be surprised because there are going to be things in there that you see. And then you're going to also be surprised, do I have enough good positive things? Because that's going to be a telltale sign of how you feel about yourself. You know, I used to think that significance was the most important thing in life, and that's just not the truth. That is the fastest way to unhappiness. Where the true greatness in life is through meaning. To find that meaning for yourself and also to serve others. When we get out of our head and start figuring, what can I do for others? That's when we really can start making exponential changes in our life. Because sometimes our own selfishness is holding us back. Our own desires to be that are weighing us down instead of also living in a state of flourishing. And we can do that. And how we do that is ask yourself again, here I am, a religious man. I don't necessarily ask myself anymore, what is my purpose? I ask, what is God's purpose for me? That's a huge difference. And when you ask, what is God's purpose for me? Then it gives you the permission to fulfill that purpose. You're no longer doing something that's self-centered, you're doing something that is externally centered. And when we start looking to help others and to improve someone else's life, strange thing happens. Our life gets better. Strange things happens. We have greater clarity in our own lives. A strange thing happens. We start realizing that even during the moments of our suffering, we had simultaneous blessings, not just before and after, but simultaneous. A strange thing happens when we start helping other people. Grace comes into our life. And we're able to find that we are enough. And we're able to find that we do love ourselves and we are worthy of love because we're pouring that love out to other people. You can't pour something out to other people unless it's there.
Yeah, you can't pour from an empty cup, that's for sure. One of
No.
the things, though, is that, a lot of people, and I know this happens, it happens to me all the time. I know what needs to be changed, but it's like I feel stuck. So why do so many people feel stuck even though they know that something has to change? It's like you have the answer, but you're just like you won't go there.
Because they're effing wimps. Because they don't want it enough. I'm sorry. I'm being as brass tacks as I can be. They don't want it enough because they have, when I say they're wimps, what I mean is because they call themselves wimps. Because they have self-defined themselves as wimps, not because Stephen is calling them a wimp. They've called themselves a wimp because you're going to do exactly what you think about yourself. So when you call yourself a wimp, you don't have a true expectation of doing something. But what if you call yourself instead of a wimp, a gladiator? Then it makes a huge difference. A good example I like to use is when people are getting divorced and they're so angry at their ex and they have a child together and they are so nasty to each other and still, even after they can be divorced and living separate and apart for years, the nastiness is still there. And I ask him, let me ask you something. Aren't you still wearing your old relationship hat with that person? Why don't you put on your parent hat instead? Do you act differently if you're wearing a parent hat than a relationship hat? The answer is yes. So it goes to our identity. So when people don't want to change, okay, guess what? The vast majority of people on earth don't change. And if you're not going to change, guess what? You're just one of them. Or are you? Because I'm not the person to has the right to tell you who you are. Only you do. Are you a wimp or are you a gladiator? And people go, oh, that's all awfully harsh. Yeah, okay. I'm not here to pacify you into mediocrity. I want you to perform the best that you can in every aspect of your life, in what I call the circle of wheel of life, in your health and vitality, in your relationships, in your career, in your finances, in your personal development and learning, in your spirituality, religion, and peace of mind, in your contribution to the world and your legacy. You're only going to do those things if you define yourself in a way that is a warrior, a gladiator, someone that's willing to step out into the arena, as Roosevelt said, and to dare greatly, like Brené Brown says, quoting Roosevelt. That's what we need to do. And that is being vulnerable. We need to put on the costume, like I said earlier. In this podcast, people put on the costume of being a victim. We need to shed ourselves from that and put on a costume of our own superhero, wearing that parent hat, wearing that hat of, I am a lo loved enough, I am enough. And then you will shed just like a butterfly sheds the cocoon. You will shed those negative definitions that you once called to yourself. So, look, I'm a tough love type life coach, author, speaker. I'm here to tell you, you get exactly in life what you expect. Okay? And so you need to expect more. What's interesting to me, people do that in their careers, for example. Oh, I've been doing X for such a long time. I've been doing it for 10 years. Okay. I'm sorry to tell you, but that doesn't mean you can't do something else. Just
Right.
because you've been in a particular rut doesn't mean you're going to stay in it until you decide to either climb out of the rut, or know what happens if you stay in a rut? The rut gets deeper. You have a choice. We have choices in life. And so a lot of times I have to talk to whoever I'm helping and talk with some tough love. And if you're listening now and you need some tough love, well, here's your tough love for the day. Because you are more than what you've allowed yourself to believe that you are. The wonderful thing is, even if we think we're wonderful, even if we think that we are limitless, we still have capabilities above our personal present belief system, no matter how high or low it is. We do. And only the future is going to tell, but we'll only know it in the moment of our presence, because we only have the moment of our presence right now. We only live in this time. Not in the future, not in the past, but now.
So, what is the first step of stopping the cycle of self-sabotage?
Get out of your head. Start reading a few books to put things in perspective. Slowly have perspective. When I say it's not overnight, it's not overnight. We run a marathon a step at a time. We as authors write books a word at a time, a thought of a time. We change our life a thought or reflection at a time. Be patient with yourself, but act and act now. I would encourage everyone immediately after this podcast to do something positive for yourself that you have not done before, ever. Whether it be go buy a book on Amazon, whether it be go buy an audible book on self-improvement, whether it be if you stay inside all the time, go take a walk, do something to interrupt your patterns, because your patterns are your systems that create your habits. And if you have bad habits in your way of thinking and your way of living, unless you disrupt those patterns by doing something different, you will never change, and you will never change your mindset. Because only when we change and get out of our environment, of our comfort zone, can we see around the corner. Because you can't have a good perspective of what's possible if you're staying where you can't look around that corner. You need to step out of what you're used to seeing. Get out of the microcosm, get out of the fishbowl of your present existence and seeing what is on the other side of the glass. That's what you need to do, and you need to do it immediately.
Thank you so much. It's been so much fun talking to you today. I feel like so many people can relate to this feeling of knowing there's so much more, but feeling stuck in that. You know, it's like
Yeah.
being in a cocoon and wanting to flourish and be the beautiful butterfly, but it is this feeling of being stuck and not knowing where to turn. And that can be scary and limiting and can feel really crappy.
Yeah.
So tell us more about your book, what you do, and where people can find out more information about you.
Well, thank you. First of all, to touch on what you just said, that's why I called my book Must, MUST. There's never been a book just called Must, and the subtitle is Becoming the Person You're Meant to Be by Stephen Rue, RUE. So why Must? Must is what your imperatives are in life, your non-negotiables. So you have to ask yourself, what are your non-negotiables in life? What are your non-negotiables in your values? What are your non-negotiables in your personal standards? What are your non-negotiables in order to accomplish your purpose in life? What are your non-negotiables for your loved ones and your relationships and yourself? These things, my friends, are your musts, MUST. Because once we determine that it's a must, then it's not a can, it's not a should, it is a must, which requires action, which requires thought, which requires persistence, which requires grit. And you can have that. And that's what my book's about. My book is about starting with foundational things. Like, you don't start off with what your purpose is. Well, I want to say my purpose is X. Well, how do you know that? Well, that's how I feel it is. Have you considered who you are before you can ask yourself why? If you ask yourself about doing some introspection on who you are first, would you come up with a better why for yourself? So that's what my book does. It brings you through your own mindset, your core beliefs, your core values, your mindset. And then and only then, after you really examine your own personal story and your narratives and your limiting beliefs and your learned helplessness, then and only then can you go into your why. Everyone wants you to jump into why. Don't do it. Don't do it. Know who you are first. And then I help people get from there, now that they have whys, their purpose that are aligned with their personal I am. That new story that they're going to write on that paper, taking away those limiting beliefs and creating their own superhero story that they can believe in and that they can act upon. Then they must act. And to act requires more than once. It can be those small incremental steps, but small incremental steps turn into a system, turn into repetition, turns into frequency changes. The multiplicity of actions creates a new habit. And when we have new habits that replace the old habits, we have a new life. And we only have that through perseverance and grit. And what is that? Those are our musts in life. So if you get nothing from this podcast, then this, get this. Ask yourself, what are your musts, MUST, in your life? My book is Must Becoming the Person You're Meant to Be. You can get it at Amazon or any other bookstore in the entire world. It's presently being in the process of being published in different languages. We've won multiple book awards. We were Amazon bestseller number one in three categories in self-improvement. But what I care about, and we're on Audible, so you can listen to the audio version, or you can listen, watch it on Kindle or ebook, hardcover, hard, paperback, whatever the case may be. But all I want you to please do is take the messages that are not from me, but from the luminaries that I collected the wisdom from. And they are collected after 3.5 years of writing and of over 3.5 decades of preparation for my personal development and then changing gears and focus into helping others. It's my gift to you that hopefully can change your life and improve the lives of everyone around you. My name's Stephen Rue. You can find me at my website, stephenrue.live, LIVE. My legal website's the .com. That's why I have the .live. And so we're going to continue to be here helping people. And if you want to email me, feel free to do so. Just go to my website. Consider picking up my book. But what I care about is you find your must in life.
Thanks again for being here. You definitely have inspired me to go do some things that I have been wanting to do for a while, and I'm sure the audience can relate. Thank you so much.
It's my honor and pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yes, and to our audience, be limitless. Go do the thing. Go to the gym. Go ask that person out. We only live once. We only get one chance. We only have one life. So let's live it to its fullest potential. Until next time, take care, everyone, and please do not forget to hit that like and subscribe button before you leave today.